What's the hot sauce? Welcome, everybody. I am Miss M.
And I'm Miss P.
For those of you who are new, thank you for joining us. For those of you who are coming back to join us for our third podcast, we would like to thank you so much for joining us on our journey. You don't know how much it means to, for us to have you back again.
Thanks for coming, guys.
So, Miss P, what are we reviewing tonight?
We are doing The Blackening.
Yeah, so The Blackening is a movie filmed in 2022 with the director. And the director's name is Tim Story, and the writer is Tracy Oliver, and also Dwayne Parkin. And it stars Grace Byers, Jermaine Fowler, also Melvin Craig, X Mayo, also Dwayne Perkins, Antoinette Robertson, Sidwell Walls, Jay Farrell, Yvonne Orji. There's DJ Bader, James Preston Rogers, and George Fisher. That's a creepy old guy. Yes. So I know everybody wants to know what we're thinking. And they're thinking, so ladies, what's the hot sauce? What are you going to rate it? All right. Should I go over our list, our hot sauce list?
Yes. So people know what the hot sauce is.
All right. So basically, Miss P and I, we have a chart called What's the Hot Sauce. For those of you who have our podcast, we do have a video version that just shows different pictures of actors, our criteria, and, well, what's the hot sauce? You can also find it on our website. But the hot sauce is at the top. We have the Carolina Reaper. That is the best film. It leaves nothing out. It keeps your attention. It just captures your emotions. And there's nothing better than this. Beneath that is the Ghost Pepper. That is the second best. This was a movie that had everything in it, but there's still maybe that it sauce missing. Then below that, we have the Habanero. And it's a good movie. It's pretty good. This is a good movie. You know, you had a good time watching it. I mean, it wasn't the best. It's not a Ghost Pepper or Carolina Reaper, but it was good. Beneath the Habanero, we have the Jalapeno. As it was meh, you know, just meh. But the lowest on our scale is the Bell Pepper. Just a complete give me my money back. I wasted the precious few minutes of my life that I have watching this film, and I want that back. Right, Miss P?
So, right.
What do you rate to this movie?
I'm giving it a habanero this time.
A habanero? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to give this movie a habanero as well.
We agree.
But let's talk about why we're giving this film a habanero. We need to run it down. Their movie criticisms. P&M's movie criticisms criteria. Starting at number 9, Miss P.
Do we like it or do we love it? Number 8, is it historically accurate? Number 7, did it strike my emotions? Number 6, did it keep my attention? Number 5, production elements? Number 4, directing? Number 3, the quality of acting? Number 2, the sound quality and the effects? And the number 1 thing on the list is cinematography.
All right, Ms. P, you go first.
Okay, number 9, do we like it or do we love it? I was in between. The funny parts were funny. The serious parts were funny. We're not supposed to be funny. They were still funny. So I loved it for what it was, for the movie that I saw. For the 97-minute runtime from start to finish, I loved it.
Yeah, I liked the 97-minute runtime. You know, I thought that was great. Easy on the budget, yeah. But also, I like the time frame because a lot of these movies are like 2 hours, 2 hours and 30 minutes. I'm like, 2 hours, 30 minutes long. I need to do other things with my life. So I liked the 97 minutes. So yeah. But as for me, do I like it or do I love it? I don't like it, but I can tell you this. I'm closer to loving it. Okay. It's not like, oh, love this. But it's like, I've got nothing but love. I've got nothing but love for this. So, yeah. So that's me. And, you know, the first line of the movie, because I guess that takes us to number 8. But this is a fictional movie, so, yeah.
But is it historically accurate? Does this movie fit into the trope Yes. So I would say this movie is very historically accurate for the time that it was made in, which was 2023 is when it was released. So it was actually, for me, historically accurate because they went through movie tropes, you know, like the black people always die at the beginning because they can't afford the actors to stay that long. That's what they did here, was the same kind of troupe because they couldn't afford them.
Yeah, that's true. It was a very small
So
budget, right?
we, it was a micro budget.
Yeah, because Jay Farrow, he is an alum from Saturday Night Live, right? And then, yeah, you had the two people in there, the most famous ones. They, you know, they're out. But again, that's, you know, more than likely budget reasons. But when it comes to like historically accurate, I will say that for this, I guess we can talk about how this fits into, say, society now. And I think that although this movie is considered a horror comedy, I do think it is also a commentary of, well, what's happening in our political climate right now at this moment.
Okay, so would you like to discuss that further, or do you want to move on to number
Well,
seven?
maybe I'll discuss it further. Viewers or listeners, tell us, would you like us to take this further? No, we can. If not, you know what to do. And don't say anything. Ourselves, you know. Or if you want a deeper discussion, a deep dive on how this movie is a political commentary on today's society, let us know and we can do a deep dive. But what I will say is just to give, you know, some hints about what I mean is that when you talk about historically accurate, we have in our movie, we have Clifton, right? And Clifton is played by the actor Jermaine Fowler. And he's like, I voted. He's like, you know, when there's that rift in the scene towards the end of the movie, it's not the end, it's more like the middle, where he's talking about all those things that makes him, well, different. That Beyonce Super Bowl performance made him feel uncomfortable. Okay. That he voted for Trump twice. Right, that he said some other things. Clifton said a lot of things. All lives matter, right? I mean, there are very strong political undertones here. But like I said, I'm not going to really get into all of that. But I do think it's important to say that this film is a political commentary.
Okay. I think that for what it was, this movie was fun. It
Yeah.
made me laugh. Like, it kept my attention. So it made me focus in on what was going on. Who was your favorite character, Lee?
Let me take a look at my list.
Okay.
I'm just going to be honest. I don't have a favorite character. It's just not a part of my MO. I don't necessarily have favorites. I see this ensemble cast as one unit. That's how I see
Yeah.
them. So I guess with that said, you know, all of them make this film work for me. What about you?
For me, I like King. I like King and I like Dwayne.
Okay, so King is played by Melvin Gregg and Dwayne as well. Dwayne
Dwayne
Perkins. Dwayne
Perkins.
is Dwayne Perkins. So, okay, why are those two characters your favorite characters?
Because he kept making reference to, he said, well, you know, that's why I didn't marry a black woman. I married a white woman. That to me was the funniest thing ever because he kept saying it over and over. And then he was like, she's Armenian. She's Armenian. And that made me laugh. But he was like, I'm not a gangster anymore. I don't carry a gun. But when push came to shove, he went right over to his bag and grabbed that gun. So
Yeah, that's
that was
funny.
funny. And the reason why I like Dwayne so much was because he was like, he's the archetype was the gay best black friend. And he was funny throughout. He was hilarious throughout the entire movie. Like, yes, ensemble cast is funny. They're funny like individually and as a whole, but just those two individuals stuck out to me because what he kept saying over and over and over, and because Dwayne took it upon himself to be like, you know what you do? You know what you do? You leave, and I'm always there to pick up the pieces, and then you go back, and then you push me away. And then when he was like, I can't do this, I can't do this, and he threw up all over the killer. That was the funniest part of the film. I know it sounds a little bit disgusting, spoiler alert, but it's pretty hilarious. Because that's how they got away.
Oh
But go
no.
ahead.
I mean, that scene was funny. And yeah, there's going to be spoilers all through this, by the way. But yeah, him throwing up, I was like, oh, well, time to my good man. Then he falls over the staircase and I'm like, oh, let's see you get up after that one. And so yeah, I definitely see it. So yeah, King, yeah, he's an interesting character. Dwayne, definitely very interesting, just hitting all the points in there. Real world keeps getting in there, that real world drama. Yeah, okay, I can see that. So yeah, I think it definitely did make me laugh. It was funny. Okay, there are definitely times when I was laughing in this film. So I guess that brings us to number seven. Did it strike my emotions?
Yes, with laughter. Pure unadulterated
Yeah.
laughter. For about 9 or 7 minutes, I laughed probably about a good
Yes, the
85% of that
vomiting
time.
made me like it just really worked out, It's usually like the perpetrator or like the villain, the antagonist that's vomiting on the people, the protagonist. Exactly. But this time it was the other way around, right? So that was interesting. And Clifton is, and what did he say? His Hyundai?
Yeah, my Hyundai. And she said, "What? Your Honda?" He's like,
My
"No, my
Hyundai.
Hyundai."
Yeah, his Hyundai ran out of power up in those woods. And so I really like I like that part, and so it was definitely funny. And I was like, really, y'all need to stop. There are very funny moments in that film, and definitely had me laughing from beginning to end. Definitely. So I guess that leads us to number six. Did it keep my attention?
It kept it
That's
through the
it.
whole film. The whole
So
film.
yeah, the film, everybody did their thing. The whole cast, they did their thing. The director did his thing. Tim, you did your thing. And Tim, but I want to say more about Tim for number four, but Tim did it, okay? But Tim, as a director, he had his arsenal. And a director's nothing without a good arsenal. That's the actor. Which we need to
Pretty
save also the
much.
actor for number three. Oh my gosh. I guess.
It blends in after a while because you can't talk about what didn't keep my attention without talking
This is
about the
true.
acting because half of that is what
Exactly.
they did.
Exactly. So what about number five? Production element.
Okay, so a little bit of backstory about this movie. This was a micro budgeted movie. So when they say a micro budget, the budget was $5 million. Usually movies are produced at higher, like $5 million is a very low budget movie. And the reason being for me is because every time black actors, black movies, they always say, "Oh no, you have to fit in. You can't. No, this isn't good enough. No, nobody will receive it." Lionsgate, after it did well, said, Hey, we'll pick it up. We'll put it in our, we'll distribute it for you."
Yeah, that's right.
After they saw how
That's
good it
right.
was going to
Because
be.
it wasn't getting, a lot of they didn't want to put a lot of money into it. They didn't feel safe because it was a majority black cast, as published on the Variety.com website, where entitled, let's see, what did they entitle this? It's called Tracy Oliver. She's one of the writers and producers on this film, The Blackening. Tracy Oliver on The Blackening box office and why making micro budget movies is empowering. So yeah, as Miss P said, they didn't really want to give it a lot of money. They were like, okay, with some majority black cast, we don't really want to make that chance, take those chances, risk that here. So they had to work with a shoestring budget, and my goodness, they did a great job.
They did 20 days of filming, only 20 days, which, if you look at anything else, they do months of filming, like 2, 3 months of filming. They get what they need. If they need them to do B footage, then they, might call the actors back or take what they need and splice it together. But usually a big production usually takes 2, 3, 4 months to do, from 2 to 4 months, unless you're doing 7 years in Tibet, which took over half a year.
Yeah, it was like going back to school again and said, hey guys, We're college students, and you know what? We're not going to let nothing stop us. Hey, Rosie, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean. So I really love this. This is the story for our cast here, from our directors to our producers to our actors. This is the story of an underdog. And audience, don't we love the stories of underdogs? I mean, just read the article from Variety. People told them, oh, this story, you know, this story, you know, okay, it's not going to have an audience. It's not going to have this. It's not going to have that. You know, and there was a lot that was said to Tracy, that was said to everybody making this film. You know, oh, well, you know, because there's one part of the article I remember reading where Tracy Oliver says, you know, they never heard, oh, this is going to be a hit. Because that's what the execs say, right? The people with the money. That's what they say. But not to them, you know. It was just, you know, let's see, right? So if you don't know Tracy Oliver is the co-writer for Girls Trip and The Creative Harlem and First Wives Club, okay? And so The Blackening is one of the latest. I have to see what else she's working on. But I believe the opening day for The Blackening did better than Girls Trip, right?
Yes. And it opened on June.
That's right.
On June of 2023.
That's right. And when it opened on its first day, it grossed $2.5 million, opening in 1,775 theaters. And they did well. And so, but total in the domestic box office, it made $17.7 million. Again, you know, that's almost six times what it made. And then it went out to the UK and to Ireland, and then worldwide, $18 million. They went into the African-American, was it African-American, what an African-American film festival. Let's see, you got to find what it's called. But when they played it there, it did very, very, very well. And then the Tribeca Film Festival, they played it there. They did really, really well. So well that Lionsgate wanted to pick it up for a distribution deal.
So the thing about, so going backwards, mm-hmm. just for a hot second, Tracy Oliver is now working on Girls Trip 2.
I like that movie.
So that's what we're looking forward to, is Girls Trip yes. 2.
I think that this film was a brilliant, you can tell from reading this article, this was really a film that was at the heart. This was definitely in Tracy Oliver's heart, because she is the last line of the article that she said, or rather, I'm going to read the last paragraph. So in the words of Tracy Oliver, I keep telling the cast and other writers, there's money out there. Oliver conclude, $3 million is a lot easier to come by than $20 million to $50 million. There's a lot of people that can piece together $3 million. We don't have to necessarily wait for a studio to say yes anymore. For a Black person, that's inspiring. So this is a story where the underdogs, they heard everything about the story. Oh, you know, it's not going to be good enough for the audience. You know, it's not going to have this much action, or, oh, there's not too much of this in the cast. Your cast is not bad. It is. You know, because there are people who will tell you all sorts of things. Your story's not this, or your story's not that, or your story, you know, it's not going to be really good enough for the audience out there. There's not really what Hollywood is doing right now. That's not what's trending. I don't know, Miss P, what do you think? You know, I mean, about what Miss Tracy Oliver said about, you don't have to wait for the studio to say yes.
It's basically independence. I have my own independence. I can make my own money. I can fund my own film. I can shoot my own film. I can have the cast that I choose to have, and we can make it work. And that's what they did. And then Lionsgate was like, hey, this is going to be, yeah, now we see this is going to be a hit, so let us distribute it for you. Okay, cool. But just know that she did it independently without the help of the people until very the very true. End.
And if you look it up, when I was looking at The Blackening, it's coming on Stars at... It started on Stars at 10 p.m. Right now, it's past 10 p.m. for us, so it started at 10 p.m. It's going to be coming on Tuesday, March 11th at 1 a.m. at 4:40 p.m. and then 7:40 p.m. and then it's going to air again on Sunday, March 16th at 7:30 a.m.
on then Stars and Black.
So there's, yeah, that's right, because you have Stars, then you have Stars West, and then Stars and Black East. So this little film did so much. So for all of you artists out there, push your work, even if you got to figure out a way to make it happen yourself, because there's always somebody out there who's going to love your work. And I think this is proof of it. With the production elements for what they had, who they were working with, how they used the Stars, especially your SNL alumni and everything from in the beginning, hats off to you. I have to say, for your for the ingenuity in this micro budget alone, because it triumphed and it did what it did, I'm tempted to bring it up from a habanero to a ghost, simply because of how resourceful they were and because of this film's accomplishment and how they pushed it and put it out there in the film festival. That's, again, important work. You have a film out there, don't be afraid. Look at the requirements of the film festivals. Do your due diligence. Do your work. Get that film in by the deadline. And you never know what's going to happen. Never know. So I think this is just very inspirational. So I guess that brings us to directing, number four. What do you think about the directing, Miss P?
The directing was fantastic. It couldn't have been better. The trope, you know, they stuck with the black horror trope. What we don't do. We don't split up. What did they do? They split.
And then they did. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, you finish, Miss P.
Go ahead. I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
So, and then when they split up, all the dark-skinned people go with one another. And all the light-skinned people stay with one another. Did you notice?
But see, yeah, I noticed. But I wasn't, like, okay.
She was like, I know. Because her name, the actress, Allison played by Grace Byard, you know, her biracialness comes up all the time, that white side, because Allison's father is white. Wait, they're always talking about it throughout the film. This is a recurring thing about her and her whiteness, you know, and she's like, I know it, what you're trying to say, I know, but I think we should split up. Rita and Dina had a conversation about, or, you know, it's the white side talking. She's like, it's not my white side talking. So I was like, oh my goodness, y'all are so silly. And so the split up, oh my God, the lightest people go with the darkest people. That was excellent. You know, it's really good directing. What do you think, Miss P? But
I think that it was kind of funny that she was the only one that knew the second verse of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Nobody else knew it except
for
her.
She seemed to be the most likely to know the second verse, because you have Shanika. The moment Shanika gets there, she's like, are you want Molly? She wants some Molly. I knew she didn't have it. Okay. And then you have Lisa, played by Antoinette Robertson. She is the one who's furnishing the Molly. Okay. She's giving the Molly. Right. And then you have Melvin, who's trying to give everybody diabetes with all that sugar in the Kool-Aid. And he's...
You mean King?
Oh, yes.
You
mean King. King, that's right. King, played by the actor Melvin Craig. Okay, so King, now and then he's putting vodka and stuff into it. And, you know, he's trying to get people drunk. He's trying to, you know, take up, put up their sugar, put them on insulin shot. So I didn't think it was going to be him. And Clifton, I already knew there was a disconnect already. You know, just there is a complete disconnect, to be honest with you. And then Nandi, he just didn't seem, played by Cynthia Wells. I hope I said your name right. Please forgive me if I did not. Okay. And then Dwayne just, I don't know. For me, Allison seemed like the one to know it for me.
But see, here's the thing. When it was about media, pop culture, anything like that, they all knew. When it was very like, how many seasons of Fresh Prince did dark skin Aunt Viv play until light skin Aunt Viv took over? And that was one of the questions from the movie. And so they automatically, and it was like 1, 2, 3, because little Nikki was in the fourth season with light skin 3. And so anything social media, they knew it. Drugs, they knew it. Anything about like Black history, they basically knew it, except for Lift Every Voice and Sing the second verse.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
So It was, it's just, that's the tale on our society now. Social media, they know anything. If you ask them a specific question about history,
that's right.
But
I thought that those questions were very interesting.
That's a commentary. Because it was a lot of media. It was a lot of social media, a lot of Black shows, or how many Black actors were on Friends ever.
It was definitely very interesting. I like the question. And the Sambo face. Sambo, my goodness. Very controversial character historically. So Sambo, so you're talking about history and everything. So, Sambo is a racial term, okay? It's a racial term. It's a derogatory term, okay? It's usually used on both people who are real African-American. And there is a story, if you don't know, called The Story of Little Black Sambo. Little Black Sambo is a children's book, and it's a children's book written and illustrated by Helen Bannerman. And it was published in October of 1899. However, in recent time, Sambo is not used as a children's book for most people anymore because it's just very antiquated, outdated, and Sambo is just a derogatory term. But I will say that I have seen teacher being prepared for where they're still using this book, The Story of Little Black Sambo. Still, yeah, there are educators that do still use this book. Interesting fun fact out there.
Now, I know we skipped over this, but let me tell you this. At the GLAAD Media Awards, The Blackening was nominated. The Image Awards for the NAACP, Outstanding Breakthrough Creative in Motion Picture. My goodness. It was Dwayne Perkins. Outstanding Ensemble and Cast they were nominated. Let's see. The Toronto International Film Festival, The Blackening, he got the People's Choice Award.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Black Reel Awards. Let me see. 2024 Outstanding Breakthrough Performance, Dwayne Perkins. Dwayne was just racking
up.
Yeah,
he really was.
And the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards, Best Supporting Performance. He was nominated. Dwayne Perkins. It looks like they were all Dwayne Perkins.
Yeah, it's very nice. Very nice. I think this cast, for them, this movie is their first big movie. This is their debut for them. This is their debut. We're going to be seeing, minus the SNL star. But this is their debut, and minus Dietrich Bader. We know him. But for most of them, this is their debut, and this is their first time having a movie out there on the big screen, having their movie being streamed and just put everywhere out there, just playing over and over again. So congratulations to you all. Congratulations. And, I don't think they would have been able to do it without Tim. For those of you who don't know Tim, since we're on the directing part, you know Tim. Even if you don't know, let's take it back for Tim, all right? Let's take it back. So Tim, you know him. He's known for Fantastic Four, directing Tim's Fantastic Four, 2005. He also directed Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer, a sequel. He also directed Barbershop, Think Like a Man, Think Like a Man 2, and Taxi. Okay, so you know him. You've seen his work. Let's see. He's had like a total of 9 nominations. There's an Image Award by the NAACP. There's a Toronto International Film, the 22 nominee for Midnight Madness, The Blackening, and a whole bunch of things for Think Like a Man, Fantastic 2, Barbershop. I'm going back for the Black Reel Award. So, the Rusty Bagel Award. So, Tim. And Tim, he's got a really nice resume, I think. And I don't think that they would have been able to do what they did without him. The shot, I was looking at everybody in the background. I was looking at Dwayne's character in the foreground, the use of the shots, how the shots were set up. Lighting, everything, and then eventually that would take us to our cinematography. But it was very well shot, and if it And everything in film works together. Everything has to work together. You have the writer, you have the producer, you have the directors, you have the actors, you have the gaffers, electricians. You have everybody working together to make this unit, this one film work. And they did it. And to do that, you have to have a very capable crew, and you have to have capable people like the director here. So very nice work. Very nice work. Can't wait to see what you do next. So I guess that takes us to number three, quality of acting. What do you think, Miss P, about the quality of acting?
Well, I think we've already discussed it several times, but the quality was great. Like, you can't get any better than the cast that they had to play the roles that they played. Everybody did their job. Everybody showed up. Everybody, you know, I'm just telling you, people that stood out to me, Dwayne, the lawyer, the girl that played the lawyer.
You are talking about Lisa, played by Antoinette Robertson.
Yeah, Lisa was pretty hilarious. And I think Clifton was actually really, really good too.
I've been waiting for number three to talk about Clifton. I've been waiting for number three, Miss P. Oh, Clifton. He had me going. He kept me in. He was pulling me in. Jermaine was doing his thing, portraying this character. He was pulling me in. He was upset. He was angry. I thought he was so interesting. From the moment he said, Hyanda, I knew that this person was interesting to me. And he goes on. And then our girl, what is her name? Oh, man, let me look for her.
The girl with the peel.
Not her. It's funny, but Ex Mayo. Or is it Ex Mayo? Did I get it right? She's the one who wanted the Molly when she scared Dwayne in the window. Okay? Because she was there. She said, what are you doing here? And you know, she didn't really remember him, right? She didn't remember him, really. Like, what are you doing here? He's like, you're going to the reunion too, right? She's like, oh yeah, the reunion. But she didn't remember Clifton. Shanika. She didn't. She didn't really remember him. And when he gets there, he doesn't know how to play spade. Okay. And I thought it was interesting because I was like, okay, now we're looking at the ostracization of the black nerd. Oh my goodness. The black nerd is getting no love. The black nerd is the other in this group of black people. I said, okay. I want to see where this is going, because we know about the black nerd. The black nerd in real life is never really accepted, right, Miss P?
Oh, it depends on the group of people. Like, in general, yes, the black nerd is never really truly accepted because they're looked at the smart kid, you know, like, hey, give me your homework. Or, hey, you don't play any sports. So that's just like when we went to college, we didn't play any sports. We were the only... Like, there was only four other black people that none of us played sports. All of us did, you know, like theater. You were biology.
We are the black nerd, okay? When everybody's like, oh my gosh, you're going to college, and how? You know, I'm not like my peer. I did not get, a sports scholarship. No. Okay. I got an academic scholarship. Okay. We are the nerd. So Princess and I were lucky enough to find each other, but that's not always the case. We have plenty of experiences where, you know, being this black kid that's the nerd, you know, it's weird. It's awkward. And he really, really channeled that. Jermaine Fowler channeled that through Clifton. And I believe Tracy Oliver was saying that they're putting all those things about those different things that a black nerd experiences all into that one character clip.
Because he said, basically, he was like, there's nobody in Vermont that knows how to play spades.
Yeah, he did say that. Yeah. You know, so there's nobody to teach him. Right. So, and this is how
they carried right there, because nobody wanted to take the time to show him. Everybody's like, I already know how to do it. You should know how to do it. Because you don't know how to do it, we're going to ostracize you even more and push you away.
Exactly. You should know how to play spades because you are black. And since you don't know how to play spades as a black person, something you should know how to do and do well, mind you. We don't have time to teach you something you should already.
And that was the sad part. Like, you could just feel the reject. Like, you could just feel it. Like, she was like, but I really want to play with you guys. It's kind of like, we'll be your friend if you know how to do X, Y, and Z. If you don't know how to do X, Y, and Z, we can't be your friend.
And that part of the story, when we talk about direction, this is the catalyst. Right? This is what pushes the story forward. This is what moves the story along. This is what leads us to the climax, where he finally said, when, you know, he's dead, he's sitting there in a chair. I'm like, he's alive. I know he's alive. I'm just waiting. I was just waiting for him to get up, you know, because I knew it. It had to be him. This movie wasn't as, again, Tracy Oliver said, wasn't taking the easy way out. It was going with the questions, asking the hard question. What is blackness? They're asking, what is blackness, by asking the question, who is the blackest? But how would you answer that question, Miss P? Who's the blackest?
Out of that whole, out of the cast, or just in general?
You choose to answer it how you choose to answer it, Miss P.
Well, for me, the blackest person in the movie was Dwayne. He was the most well-versed. He knew, like, a lot of the social media questions. Like, he was the blackest to me, because everybody else was more or less like, yeah, I'll do what you do. I'll do and say whatever you want me to say. Like, you know, like, he was the leader. Like, when push came to shove, he was the leader. He was like, I vote this, or I vote that, or this or that. But he was the leader. And so, for me, he was the blackest.
Okay. So Miss P gave you a standpoint from a perspective from the film. I'm going to say that when they say who is the blackest, to me, they're saying, well, what is blackness? Is it the color of your skin? Is it how much white blood do you have in you from your, say, your father, your mother, your grandfather, your grandparents, your great-grandparents? Is how curly your hair is? Is it how straight your hair is? Is it how narrow are European your features on your face? What is, I would have to say, for the diaspora, that is blackness, that blackness cannot be so easily defined by one's characteristics or looks. That's not what blackness is. Blackness is in itself what we're talking about, our roots, common roots where we all come from, that common struggle, you know. Whether or not you were born with straighter hair, curlier hair, is nothing you could have helped. Whether or not you were born with whiter skin, a lighter or darker skin, is nothing you could have helped. Whether or not your parents are your great-grandparents, or and so on and so forth, are of another ethnicity, is nothing that you yourself could have helped. But it doesn't change the fact that you are black. And let's not even talk about political stances, because that's all over with Clifton, too, and his All Lives Matter, right? This is also a different political stance than the other as well. This is another thing that sets Clifton apart from the rest of the, well, these firms at this reunion. What do you think about that, Ms. P?
Well, way to steal the gusto. But, so, how do I feel? I feel like this. You can't pinpoint what blackness is. You can't. You can't say, oh, it's because I'm this or it's because I'm that. You just can't. You just have to be like this. You and I both know that we're black at the end of the day. So my thing is, you just can't say, oh, I'm black because I choose to be black today. That's not how that works in life. But going off of Miss M's, like, her whole thing, yeah, we're going to have to edit that out, edit my whole speech out.
You want it all gone?
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
All right, so here's what we'll do. We'll edit that out. It, whatever you say next is what you want, put it, the podcast.
So you can't define blackness. It's undefinable.
This is true. It's like saying define humanity. How am I going to define humanity? From our woes and sorrow to our ups and lives and our successes, our achievements, we as the human race have done so many amazing things that we can be proud of. But we've also done some horrible things that are embarrassing. How do you define something so profound? So with that said, audience, we want you to think about it. And tell us what you think. Comment. Tell us. Let's have a discussion. I want to talk with you, Miss P, and we want to converse with you.
We want the dialogue. Give us something to work for.
Come on, P. All right. So that brings us to number two, sound quality and effect. So, Oh, no, you first.
I think they did a great job. Like, I know I keep saying it over and over. They did a great job. No, honestly, yeah, okay, so they be coming around the mountain. Every time the killer would turn on the TV, that's what would play. And it just made me chuckle a little bit. And it was kind of ominous a little bit. It's kind of creepy, but I liked it. Like, I liked everything. I liked the sound. It wasn't muffled. It wasn't crazy. Everybody sounded like, they made sense when they spoke. So I liked it.
I do like the sound quality, the effects. I think they were used appropriately, in ways we would expect, and also in ways to move the story forward. As long as it moves the story forward and adds to the story, doesn't take away, isn't distracting, I'm for it. If it doesn't, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? You're destroying the quality of the story. It has to add to the story, it has to move the story along, it has to enhance the story. So I couldn't agree more with you, Miss. So, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us down to number one, Miss P, infamous favorite, cinematography. Go ahead, Miss P, tell us about that cinematography.
It was nice. It was warm. It was rich. The colors were nice. There was no harsh colors. There was no like, oh my gosh, why did they do it like this? Or, oh my gosh, I can't see anything because it's all black. But when it was black, you could still see. Like, they didn't make it so black that you needed a light or you needed to be like, what's happening? I can't see anything. I feel like I'm on a ride. It wasn't like that. You could see everything clearly, which is a great thing.
That's right. The DP here, the cinematographer, rather, some people will say there's a difference between DP and cinematographer, but that's a discussion for another time. So the cinematographer here, Todd A. Dosrae, he did a really good job. He is known for Dante's Peak and did visual effects. And let's see, we're talking going back to money talk. Ooh, camera electrical. Department, Hard Target, we Red State Camera and Electrical Department back in 2011. Let's bring it up to something more recent. Mr. Todd Dosrae has done. So bringing it back up and more things that are more recent. Two episodes, David Makes Men, 2019, Parish, cinematographer Paris 2024, and another television series, director of photography, The Irrational. Yes, so he definitely has a long history. This is going back to 97.
Okay.
Emerging, he won the Emerging Cinematographer Award for Fortunate Son in 1999, and he won the Emerging Cinematographer Award in 2005 for Ugly. Thank you for bringing us some great cinematography. I know Miss P definitely thanks you.
See, people
You
laugh,
should.
but
You go
huh?
for it.
Okay, I was just saying, people always laugh at that because to me, you can't have a good movie if the
Well,
lighting is
no, you
off.
can't.
It's like that one episode of Game of Thrones where everything was dark. I know it was meant to be that way, but you couldn't see anything, and I hated it.
But again, it all depends on what the context of the story is. But if it doesn't fit the context of the story, especially, no.
It was just so dark you couldn't see. I mean, you see people dying, you see fire, but it was so dark. You see the camera moving up and down, but you just couldn't see. And I don't like that when you just can't see. I want to be able to see everything.
Which is why we haven't done Nosferatu yet, even though I want to. But I think, I've been waiting to watch it. We'll see if we review it. We'll see. We'll see.
You got me.
But I still think we need to review it. I know, I think, especially if you've seen the original Nosferatu, right? But anyways, that is not about the this is about the blackening. And I'm glad I watched it. I think that it was a really good film. A really, really, really good film. But
See?
the one thing I would say that I forgot to say is that at one point Clifton said, "You gave it what it wanted." Do you remember when he said that? You gave it what it wanted. When he's asking,
Like animal.
yeah, what else?
Basically, he said you gave it what it wanted, which was to act crazy, act like animals, turn on each other instead of working together, which that was what he was trying to get them to do, I think, even though he wanted to kill them. He wanted to see how their bond was, how strong the bond that they had. And he saw that, okay, this person don't get along. This person don't get along. So let me destroy what they already have. Let me try to break it down even further.
They kept separating. They kept separating. And what they needed was to act as a unit, a team. And that's what they needed to do. And that's one of the things I didn't want to say. And the last thing I want to say about this film is that we have forgotten Miss P to talk about one more central character in this drug. The drugs are a character in this film. It puts the story forward.
And we
But.
forgot something else, Miss M. We forgot that they could do the thing where you can look at somebody and you could
Well,
talk to
they were
them with
all
a
being
and
telepathic.
then
They're all telepaths, right? Let's not forget that they were all telepaths, right? And I think it had to do with the mollies and the Adderalls.
I think it's the thing where black people can talk without talking. Like, I can look at you and you know what I'm thinking. Like, I can look at you, like, we're in a situation and we both, look at each other. We know what each other's thinking. And I think that they did inter dialogue just to be like, so people would know what's going
That
on.
is true. Audience, have you ever had that experience where you look at your friend and you just give a certain look, and your friend gives you the look, and your friend knows exactly what it is, but no words were spoken? I guess we all have our telepathic moments of clairvoyancy. But
I think it's just that whole thing right there. It's just, I know what I want to say, but I'm not going to say it out loud because I want to look at you and you don't know
right?
what I'm
Do you
saying.
remember when they look, they talk about their plan, right? And then they look at Clifton and he said, "What? You know what we just said?" And Clifton's like, "Yes, I heard everything." To me, that part was so funny.
Like, oh no.
Nobody said anything aloud,
You
right?
talking to
But
me?
Clifton knew everything,
He's like, I can hear y'all. You
right?
know that, right?
Right. But you know what they also say, body language, your body language, facial expressions, that's 80% of the dialogue right there. That's physical dialogue, right? And that your actual words are really just 20%. So I think that's also what they're showcasing right here in this movie. I wanted to talk about that because I thought that part was so funny.
You were like, they're telepathic. Just FYI, we watch our movies together every single time together. We watch our movies together all the time.
Yep.
And because we watch our movies together, I always have things to say. I always have things to say during the
Yeah,
movie.
definitely. I need my things to say too. And then, afterwards we start filming for you because we want to keep our thoughts fresh. This is for you. We do this for you. But it's also for us to share something with you, to talk about films because film is everything. Film is life. And we want you to tell us your thoughts. If there are any movies that you want us to review, let us know. Drop them in the comments. Tell us, hey, we want you to review this movie next. All right, Miss P.
Tell them we'll give it the old
Yep,
college
that's
try.
right. Well, Miss P, audience, our friend, I think that's it for P&M's movie criticisms. I'm about this P.
Next week at 8 p.m. sharp, Saturday, March the 15th, we will be going live. So please join us. We'll send you the link if you need it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. See you Saturday.